everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program as we start the theme music twice. You want to try it again? You want to do it again? Huh? All right. That's probably an indicator of what's going to happen tonight, right? Oh, my God. Woo! You know, you think you've got problems worrying about what's going on in the Gulf. And we definitely do, because obviously that situation is not fixed. As we used to say incorrectly, it hasn't been repaired. But if you think that's bad, how about this? This blew right past me last Thursday. It's from the Christian Science Monitor. It says, an upper layer of Earth's atmosphere recently collapsed in an unexpectedly large contraction, the sheer size of which has scientists wondering what's going on. That's according to NASA. A layer of gas called the thermosphere, I never heard of that one, is now rebounding. This type of collapse, it says here, is not rare, but its magnitude shocked scientists. John Emmert of the Naval Research Lab, lead author of a paper announcing the finding in the June 19 issue of the journal Geophysical Research Letters, said, quote, this is the biggest contraction of the thermosphere in at least 43 years. It's a space age record, end quote. Now, the collapse occurred during a period of relative solar inactivity. So, no, it can't be written off to massive storms on the sun. It's called a solar minimum, which occurred from 2008 to 2009. These minimums are known to cool and contract the thermosphere. However, the recent collapse was 2 to 3 times greater than low solar activity could explain. Professor, or the research guy, Emmert, said, quote, something is going on that we do not understand, end quote. Oh, good. Now, for those of you who are furiously looking it up on Wikipedia, the thermosphere lies close to where our planet meets the edge of space. It ranges in altitude from 55 miles up to 370 miles up. At this height, satellites and meteors fly, and auroras shine. The thermosphere interacts strongly with the sun, so it's very affected by periods of high or low solar activity. Anyway, the research guy said the numbers don't add up. Even when we take CO2 into account, using our best understanding of how it operates as a coolant, we cannot fully explain the thermosphere's collapse. Feeling a little nervous tonight, are you? When I read that, I just, oh, yeah, okay. 42 Americans dead in Afghanistan now in July. Two more American soldiers over the weekend. 42 young Americans dead because Barack Obama refuses to end our engagement in Afghanistan and leave. We have absolutely no business being there. Halliburton, Dick Cheney's company. God, I keep thinking about that. That's what it sounds like if you put a stethoscope on his chest. No heartbeat, no pulse, no blood pressure. Anyway, his former company, Halliburton, says its second quarter profit has jumped 83% despite Halliburton's involvement in the Gulf of Mexico oil eruption. The news caused Halliburton shares, this was today, to soar 5% on Wall Street's pre-opening trade today. Halliburton announced that the boom is the result of a hike in natural gas drilling activities in the United States. Yee-haw! They just never lose, do they, huh? You lose, I lose, but not companies like Halliburton. Hey, we've got did you hear about Glenn Beck? He
stood up in Salt Lake City at his American Revival meeting on Saturday. And he told everybody that he may be going blind. Beck says he's been diagnosed with macular dystrophy. Oh.
Let's see. Limbaugh goes deaf. Beck goes blind. What's going to happen to the savage wiener? Michael's that. What's going to happen? Well, I know it's going to happen to Hannity. One of these days, he's going to be caught with a live boy or a dead girl, one of the two, and that's going to be it for Mr. Sean. So now that Beck is going blind, Limbaugh has metal in his ears so he can pretend like he hears things. That gives Hannity a chance. Anyway, Beck also says he needs... He needs some protection. He needs help because people that Beck and his crew is fighting are really, really dangerous. Yoo-hoo. You want to play the sound? No problem.
This is why the knives are coming out. And I ask for you, please, to not only pray for me and my family, I ask that you would pray for my staff, but also please, I beg of you, to pray for all those that are associated with me. We are dealing with people that believe in the weather underground. We are dealing now with the worst of the worst. We are dealing with the dregs of our society.
The weather underground?
The weather underground.
Oh, my God!
The Communist Party USA.
Communists?
Revolutionaries like Van Jones and Storm.
Woo!
We are dealing with really, really,
really,
really dangerous people.
We're gonna get you, Glenn!
And I ask that you would pray for protection, just on me.
No.
And pray for guidance.
Pray.
For not just me. Pray for that on all those who are associated with us.
Please. Pray for us. Help us. This guy is mad. He's insane. The weather underground is coming after Glenn! Cuckoo! Cuckoo! The weather underground was 1966? That was, I think, before you were born, you half-wit. And who else? Who else is coming after him? The Communist Party USA? Van Jones? CP USA is coming after Beck? Why? Beck is doing more to recruit people towards a socialistic form of government. Please pray for us. We need protection. I'm hiring people with vowels at the ends of their last names to protect me. But I need Jesus. I need God. What should I do? Do I pray? I ask my sheep. Please, sheep, baa for me. We're being attacked. Van Jones, the communists, the Negroes, the queers, the weather underground, the weather overground. Oh, there's bats. Oh, my God, there's bats in here. Look. Help. There's animals on the floor. God. Help me! Romeo and Juliet are together in eternity.
a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Yeah, a lot of stuff to be terribly scared of, don't you think? And I'm right there, man. Yeah, I'm right there. According to the Washington Post, the BP moves the goalposts now for the oil well integrity test. Did you read about this? As Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen has explained over and over and over again, sustained pressure readings above 8,000 PSI would show that the wellbore is more or less intact, while pressure of 6,000 PSI or less would mean there could be major problems. The director of geoscience programs at the University of Houston explained to CNN that the pressure at the bottom of the well is 11,000 PSI, and so scientists have calculated that it should be 8,000 at the top of the well. Yet BP is now trying to pretend that 8,000 PSI was never the target. No! As oil industry expert Robert Kavner writes, Kent Wells of BP moved the goalposts during his Friday briefing, saying, quote, "We also said that if the pressure goes above 8,000 pounds, and the number is 7,500 pounds, it would really say to us that we have integrity under essentially any scenario," end quote. Which is very smooth. In one sweeping statement that the press let him get away with, Mr. Wells moved the target pressure down as much as 1,500 PSI from the 9,000 to 7,500, much closer to the 6,700 they were holding, which is actually the lower end of the ambiguity range that we talked about on Friday. But Wells did it again yesterday, Sunday, moving the good integrity range number down to 6,000 to 7,500, saying, quote, "But at this point, there's no evidence that we have no integrity. And that's very good. And the fact that the pressure is continuing to rise is giving us more and more confidence as we go through this process." So, bottom line, over the past 3 days, BP has walked the integrity goalpost. You know, integrity in the sense of it's not going to explode. Down from as high as 9,000 to 6,000. Or at least the 6,700, which happens to be where they are. Give or take 100 PSIs. PSI. You know, Admiral Allen didn't make up the 8,000 to 9,000, being a sea captain, as he is, and knowing little to nothing about oil and gas. Somebody gave him those numbers. Somebody gave him those numbers. BP moved the goalpost and the timeline, and the crack corporate media let him get away with it. Again. And Bob has sent this to me, finishes by saying, "We knew the bastards were lying last week. The mainstream media and the Obama administration has given BP a free pass, as well as a get-out-of-jail-free card." I want to get to this thing a little bit later this evening that was in the Washington Post today. It's all over the Internet because it's too big to be in the Washington Post. About America's spook, our spy service. God, exclamation point. I can't share a lot of it with you because it's a massive, Dana Priest is the lead writer, Pulitzer Prize winner, Dana Priest, and she's assisted by William Arkin. But what they have revealed is the fact that 850,000 plus Americans now work with top secret clearance 854,000 Americans. There are hundreds of federal departments and agencies operating at, out of 1,300 facilities around the country. They have under contract nearly 2,000 companies. And this is about security. This is about 850,000 Americans with top secret clearance. Now, how many of the of those 850,000 people might wake up one day and say, "You know what? I think I'm just going to blow. I'm going to let all the secrets go." And somebody like Glenn Beck or Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh will notify their contacts in the world of terror, and there's going to be a massive killing in this country. Because this is what Bush, this is what Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity want. They want mega death in this country, and now here's the way they can do it. All they have to do is find one of these 850,000 Americans with top security clearance, and all Glenn Beck has to do is whisper in this poor bastard's ear that he, Beck, is really the Messiah. And the freak will do anything. It's going to come. You know it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. I don't know if I'm going to get to the Washington Post article or not. It's just more of the same old nonsense. I've got something for you here that is really, 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 really scary. I've got two sources. First, something written by Alexander Higgins, posted today. And then something written by Gary Hauser, posted today. Hauser's was posted at Common Dreams. The other one was posted at Higgins' blog site, I guess. But let's go with the Gary Hauser piece. He is a public interest writer, columnist, anti-coal campaigner, green energy advocate, and activist with Climate SOS. You can go there, climatesos.org. And he also is seeking support for a broadcast-quality documentary on what he refers to as the methane time bomb. If you've been following anything about methane gas, not just the methane that has been erupting along with the oil in the Gulf of Mexico. But these huge methane entrapments that are in the frozen tundra, and as the frozen northern so-called wastes around that part of the globe, especially Siberia, start to soften, to melt, permafrost starts to get soggy, tremendous amounts of methane are being and will be, even more, will be released into the atmosphere. Here's a press release from a couple of months ago from the National Science Foundation. Methane is leaking from the East Siberian Arctic Shelf into the atmosphere at an alarming rate. Release of even a fraction of the methane stored in the shelf could trigger abrupt climate warming. And Gary Hauser writes, excuse me, this is rather lengthy. If you want to leave and come back in 10 minutes, I'll certainly understand. No, not you. As the U.S. Senate finally prepares to bring climate-related legislation to the floor, it has become painfully obvious that the most crucial ingredient in any such debate, a true sense of urgency, is completely absent. Despite the fact that all future life on the planet hangs in the balance and a point of irreversible runaway warming is being rapidly approached, the Senate is proceeding as if it is sleepwalking or in a stupor. It has allowed the fossil fuel industry to sabotage all effort at meaningful carbon emission reductions and will only be considering legislation that is woefully inadequate to prevent catastrophe. Those who follow this issue likely have familiarity with the concept of tipping points. Now, that innocuous-sounding phrase does not do justice to its vast meaning. It refers to the crossing of a line whereby tremendous natural forces are unleashed and an unstoppable rush of interlocking climate disruptions wreak havoc on the Earth and its fragile web of life-supporting ecosystems. Once set in motion, it cannot be predicted how far the devastation would extend. Geological records have linked a severe climate shift with the so-called Great Extinction of several millions of years ago, an event which wiped out a ghastly 90% of all life forms on the planet. Serving as a direct counterpoint to this disastrous disconnect from reality in the Senate is the stunning news that these tipping points may be much closer than previously imagined. Ignored by mainstream media, recent scientific findings have the potential to turn the world as we know it upside down. Situated off the Siberian coast in an area containing more carbon than that known to exist in all the world's oil, coal, and natural gas reserves combined, is the climate threat of all climate threats. Some call it the Arctic super carbon pool. Others call it a methane time bomb. The reason for this ominous latter description, methane time bomb, is the quite real threat of an unstoppable chain reaction which could release much of all of this tremendous stockpile. This is a nightmare scenario feared by many tracking the evolution of the climate emergency. Methane is a particularly powerful greenhouse gas, at least 25 times more potent than carbon dioxide. Once the methane, currently in frozen form, begins to thaw and release, it either oxidizes in the water or travels to the surface and enters the atmosphere. If the latter occurs, if it travels to the surface and enters the atmosphere, it can act as a strong warming agent, therefore cause even more of the frozen methane to thaw and release. The scientific term for this self-perpetuating cycle, of course, is reinforcing feedback. The conventional wisdom, so-called, was that this thawing and venting of methane would not manifest for at least 100 years. But as the case has been with much so-called wisdom these days, scientists have encountered great difficulty in accurately predicting the full consequences of the unprecedented alterations being imposed on the planet by greenhouse gases. The reality of climate disruption has continued to outpace the projections. Recent studies of the Siberian methane show that a very serious amount is already venting into the atmosphere. In their report, researchers Natalia Shakova and Igor Semelitov describe that methane is now being released across a full 50% of a quite sizable study area in the East Siberian Arctic Shelf. Based on 5,100 seawater samples taken from 1,080 different locations, they report that 80% of the bottom water and 50% of the surface water is super saturated with methane. Added to the seriousness is the fact that this methane is not oxidizing in the water. Due to the shallow depths of these seabeds, the methane is traveling directly to the surface and venting into the atmosphere. Methane is a volatile gas that rapidly expands in volume as it releases. Referring to the giant stockpile in this Arctic shelf, Shakova and Semelitov warn that, quote, it is highly possible for abrupt release at any time. That may cause a 12-time increase of modern atmospheric methane burden with consequent catastrophic greenhouse warming, end quote. Now, as if this information is not unsettling enough, one then encounters the following staggering fact. This entire scenario is being played out in the most rapidly warming geographic location on the planet. The Arctic is warming more quickly than the rest of the world, and this warming is most pronounced in the Arctic shelf, where the methane is. Given the potential for such a catastrophic event, and with so many factors lining up that could indeed release the trigger, one would expect the collective scientific community to issue a grave warning to the world. If ever there was a time to exercise the precautionary principle, it would be now. Stunningly, the scientific community is failing to do so. Instead, in a classic exhibition of disconnectedness, perhaps in combination with the hesitancy brought on by the aggressive attacks of global climate change deniers, it is calling for more definitive proof that the thawing of methane is directly related to human-generated warming and not being caused by other natural sources. The stupendously dangerous flaw in this reaction is that by the time such proof is, quote, definitively gathered, end quote, it could well be too late to stop the runaway chain reaction. In a situation where we may already be too late, it is the height of irresponsibility to argue for even more delay. If a blind person appears to be walking toward a cliff and is only three steps away, does a responsible observer guide that person away from the edge or stand back and wait for more proof? In this case, the blind person is all of humanity. The world needs every precious moment it can find to move back from the precipice. Because of time consumed to document and verify, IPCC, the Intergovernment Panel on Climate Change, reports and projections have been lagging at least 2 or 3 years behind what is actually happening in real life, with the thawing of sea-based methane already having been miscalculated. This looming threat that a so-called methane time bomb is on the verge of being activated, if indeed it has not already occurred, is only beginning to be addressed by climate modeling and IPCC studies. The scientific community must immediately ramp up its effort and mobilize whatever resources are needed to either confirm or disprove that this activation is occurring. Now let's pause here for a break, and when we come back... I want to continue this just a little bit more. And again, you take this with as many grains of salt as you want to. I'm really to the point on this program where, you know, I know that if you're listening, you're not a right-wing freak, if that's not redundant, then you're listening because, you know, you're looking to find information that you may get a connection to by listening to this program. I mean, again, we're not here to educate. I don't believe in that, or to inform or enlighten. It's just to say, look, this is happening. If you want to check it out yourself. So, hi, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Yeah, what I'm just about finished with. It was posted today at commondreams.org, written by Gary Hauser, about dangerous methane seeping from Siberian seabeds, and it is a monster that... Gary goes on, even as such effort proceeds, the effort by the scientific community to... tell us what's happening. Even as such effort proceeds, however, it has an immediate and transcendent moral responsibility, the scientific community does, to issue a strong warning to both policymakers and the public about what is at risk. Testimony to Congress by the National Academy of Sciences that climate disruption is real and human-caused is valuable, But the current context, too measured and mild, it does not convey that humanity is truly perched on a precipice overlooking an abyss. It does not begin to do justice to the monumental urgency of the crisis we're in. How humanity is on the verge of unleashing a beast it will not be able to control. Why are there so few climate scientists willing to stand behind Jim Hansen and truly speak from their consciences about this disaster that is unfolding? Some say that policy must be left to the policymakers. But it is now obvious that legislation being discussed in Congress is completely out of touch with the scientific reality. The two primary bills, Waxman-Markey and Kerry Lieberman, were already allowing the industry to stonewall actual carbon emission reductions for 15 to 20 years. Now the Senate is capitulating even further. Such a delay would all but guarantee the crossing of tipping points. We have reached physical limits that cannot be negotiated away. Those who have lost their way in the inside the beltway world of political horse trading must be brought to recognize this reality before it's too late. This indictment applies not only to the politicians, but also the large, well-funded, so-called environmental groups like Environmental Defense Fund and the National Resource and Defense Council that have been seduced into the gospel of endless compromise. If the scientific community was to empower itself at this time of global emergency and somehow find the much stronger and louder voice that is needed, there is hope that at least a few members of the Senate might actually become emboldened to regain their own courage and stand up to the moneyed interests that have hijacked this legislation. The mother lode of Earth's stockpile of carbon exists on the shallow seabeds off the Siberian coast. For all practical purposes, a veritable doomsday beast ready to rise in retribution for humanity's abuse of the Earth and its Faustian bargain with the gods of oil and coal. Extremely volatile, it is the same gas believed to have entered both the oil rig in the Gulf and the coal mine in West Virginia, causing destructive explosions. Some might interpret this as a warning to humanity. Methane has been found to be thawing and releasing to the surface in 50% of a large study area. In a location that is warming more quickly than the rest of the world, the release of only 0.5% of the stockpile has been determined to be capable of causing abrupt climate change. If this most feared feedback of all, the one which humanity could likely be helpless to stop once activated, has not already started, then it certainly appears that all the factors necessary to trigger it are lining up. One day, the public release of these findings may hold great significance. It might be seen as a time when at least a handful of scientists tried to warn about the coming disaster. This time might be celebrated as the beginning of the great wake-up in which the scientific community spoke out in a unified and bold voice. Both policymakers and mainstream enviros rediscovered their backbone, and the cataclysm was avoided. But based on current reality, it may well turn into a time for lamentation. Those clinging for survival in a world ravaged by climate catastrophe may look back with anger and an acute sense of betrayal about the passivity and the silence of those who could have made a difference, and mourn the indefensible failure to act while there was still time. So to get your week started, that was written by Gary Hauser. You can, there's a website, climatesos.org, that he is associated with, climatesos.org. the press release is from the National Science Foundation. The release was March 4th this year, 2010, National Science Foundation. And if you want to read the article yourself, go to commondreams.org. And it's Gary Hauser. Look for it by author Gary Hauser, H-O-U-S-E-R. If you want to.
Oh, but listen, we've got to make sure that the Taliban is...
And Alexander Higgins posted this today. As the conditions of BP's leaking oil well continues to deteriorate, BP has tried desperately to prevent the government from monitoring the seafloor for oil and methane leaks. This is posted today, too. An anonymous government official said BP is not complying with the government's demand for more monitoring of oil and methane leaks on the seafloor. BP spokesman Mark Salt declined to comment on the allegation. Yesterday, however, the feds finally moved in with their own ships and equipment to monitor the seafloor. The government almost immediately found oil leaking from the seafloor along with multiple methane leaks, but did not immediately inform the public of their findings. However, it didn't take long before anonymous government official leaked those findings to the media. CBS Channel 12 in West Palm Beach reported oil seepage and methane detected around the well. ABC News reported an anonymous government official revealed, quote, there may be leaking methane around the well. Thad Allen says there is an unidentified seep close to the well. Pressure testing will continue in 24-hour increments. The Associated Press quotes a government source who says there may be leaking methane. This is so unbelievably funny. Isn't it funny? Huh? Isn't this funny? We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. Thanks for hanging around, especially after the first hour. Good God. It's time to go out and dig a hole. A very deep hole. Eh? I don't even want to do this one, any more of this from... from the Har in the Gulf of Mexico. The AP quotes a government source who says there may be leaking methane. Shortly after the government's discovery of the methane oil leaks, after that was leaked to the media, Thad Allen, our plain-speaking former admiral, sent a sharply worded letter to BP confirming the statements of the government official. This is what Thad Allen said. Given the current observations from the test, including the detected deep seep a distance from the well and undetermined anomalies at the wellhead, monitoring of the seabed is of paramount importance during the test period. As a continued condition of the test, you are required to provide as a top priority access and coordination for the monitoring systems, which include seismic and sonar surface ships and subsea ROV and acoustic systems. Now, understand that everything's come to a stop again here in the last few hours. Yeah. When seeps are detected, Thad Allen goes on, you are directed to marshal resources, quickly investigate, and report findings to the government in no more than 4 hours. I direct you to provide me a written procedure for opening the choke valve as quickly as possible without damaging the well should hydrocarbon seepage near the well head be confirmed. Now, that letter from Thad Allen revealed that the multiple statements BP has given the media over the past few days claiming that there were no signs of oil leaking from the seafloor, that it's all lies. Every bit of it is lies. Our lies? Now, just hours before Thad Allen sent the letter to BP, BP gave the following statement. Quote, now, this is where they once again deny there was any oil leaking from the seafloor. BP says, on the well integrity test, the well remains shut in. The pressure does continue to build slowly in between 1 and 2 pounds per square inch per hour. And the pressure now is at 6,778 pounds per square inch. So that trend continues, as we would have forecast in a scenario we talked about, where some of the reservoir pressure has been depleted. So the trend continues to follow that expectation. Yeah, the reservoir pressure has been depleted, perhaps, because of the enormous amount, the millions and millions of gallons that are now in the Gulf of Mexico. And then BP's statement went on to say, as you know, we have a very extensive monitoring program underway. This includes regular seismic runs. This includes sonar activity. This includes monitoring with the remote operated vehicles. These robotic submarines, as well as looking at temperature and noise information. All of the data continues to show encouraging signs. We're not seeing any problem at this point of any issues with the shut-in as we continue to review that data on a very regular basis with the government teams. And also, there's enough out there, if you want to go look at it, at what BP has done to the planet and to governments and to countries over the past 55 years. If you got the stomach for it, if you want to go take a look at this company that tried to sell itself as environmentally friendly.
BP, beyond petroleum, look at our little green flower. Isn't this cute? Oh, God.
While they're raping and pillaging, destroying, having people murdered, using the armies of various dictatorial governments to suppress any kind of dissent as they destroyed country after country after country. To add insult to injury, BP also revealed that there are at least two sources of bubbles, bubbles leaking from the BOP, the blowout preventer. Although BP claims, they're not hydrocarbons. It says, BP says, and based on that, we will, with these sort of results, will continue to leave the well shut in. So at this point, it is encouraging. If you've been watching the video feeds, you have noticed in two different locations, we've seen a few bubbles. I think, as Kent mentioned yesterday, this is not uncommon, but clearly it's important that we check everything very closely. So we're monitoring that. We have done some simple tests to determine if these bubbles appear to be from hydrocarbons or from something else. Well, CBS News reports that government scientists are indeed worried that the bubbles are methane. CBS News correspondent Kelly Cobiella reports the stream of bubbles coming from the containment cap itself, which may contain high levels of methane, is also worrying government scientists. CBS News is also reporting that the government has detected oil and methane surfacing 3 kilometers from the wellhead, in addition to several anomalies on the top of the sea directly above the wellhead. Anomalies. Things that can't be explained. CBS News goes on to say, a seep near the oil well that had been spewing crude in the Gulf of Mexico is adding a new twist to a disagreement between BP and the government over what to do next now that the oil has been capped. CBS News correspondent Kelly Cobiella reports the stream of bubbles coming from the containment cap itself, which may contain high levels of methane, is worrying scientists. To make matters worse, there's now evidence that the condition of the blow-up preventer itself is now beginning to deteriorate. While monitoring the live BP oil spill multi-ROV camera wall, it was recorded several videos of a new oil leak in the blow-up preventer. Yet despite overwhelming evidence that the integrity of both the well and the blow-up preventer have been compromised, the federal government has decided to allow BP to keep the well closed, a move that is all reward and no risk for BP. I'd rather talk about puppies. Is BP hoping for an underground blowout? That may seem like an odd question at first, but for BP, the fine stopped as soon as they capped the well. BP argues, bottom line, that no one wants to see any more oil leaking into the Gulf, which is a valid argument. But as has been pointed out, the only way the government will ever get accurate flow rate measurements so they can decide what the fines is by reopening the well and capturing all the oil leaking from it. BP's fine stopped the day BP capped the well. Keep that in mind. Okay, BP is not getting fined for the oil leaking through the seafloor because it is not being measured. And to be frank, there's no way to measure it. See how all this works? Isn't this lovely? Ah, isn't this wonderful? Yay! What does oil leaking from cracks in the seafloor mean? I'll tell you that when we come back, right after this break. Are we going to take a break here? Do we have any music? Do you have anything? Hello?
Yeah. I'm trying.
It won't play? Okay. Well, let the hell with it. Let's just talk about stuff. Because we have to break here in a couple of seconds anyway. What does oil leaking from cracks in the seafloor mean? Huh? It can't be good, can it, Truth Seeker? This cannot be a good thing. Oil leaking from cracks in the seafloor. Now, during a similar blowout that happened 30 years ago during the Mexican, the Ixtoc disaster, something similar occurred, and I'll share that with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Nobody told me there'd be these like these.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. What does oil leaking from cracks in the seafloor mean? I mean, just asking the question is, I mean, it's like insane, right? Huh?
What are we going to do about that guy in the kitchen who's got the knives and the guns and is holding Granny hostage and has been eating the family dog?
That's what that question sounds like. What does oil leaking from cracks in the seafloor mean? Well, again, according to Alexander Higgins, who has just done a tremendous amount of work here putting all this stuff together, he reports that during a similar blowout that happened over 30 years ago during the Mexican, the Ixtoc disaster, an underground blowout occurred that led to several leaks from cracks in the seafloor. And those leaks hindered the killing of the well using a single relief well, but the well was eventually killed using two relief wells. BP has continued to stonewall Congress, and by refusing to release the data it has about the seafloor leaks and the integrity of the wellbore, even though BP was first ordered to release all data about all this stuff almost a month ago. Still, the confirmation that there is oil leaking from the seafloor near the well should really not come as a surprise. Those reports, in combination with released BP documents, confirming an open hole in the well casing and collapsed rock around the well bore leads any to the logical conclusion that such leaks would occur on the seafloor. And while reports and videos of oil leaking from cracks in the seafloor have been making their way around the internet for months, the acknowledgement by the government that oil is leaking from the seafloor finally confirms that BP will run into problems that could prevent it from permanently capping the well. And the longer the well is closed, like it is right now, the higher the chances that an all-out underground blowout occurs, which would further complicate BP's efforts to permanently stop the leaking well. Oh, and by the way, the high concentration of methane around the well bore is a prelude to oil leaking from the same locations because it's easier for methane to escape through the cracks than it is for oil. Because one's a gas and what? Never mind. If the cap on the well isn't opened soon, it is likely that the oil that is now leaking some distance from the well, I understand it's a little around 2 miles, will soon start leaking very close to the well and possibly from directly beneath the well casing itself. So remember that sense of relief you felt, when was it last week, when all of a sudden they put a cap on the well? Look. Look, that bubble of black death, that column of black death has stopped. Look. Oh, salvation. Oh, this is wonderful. Talk about a short-lived moment of false security. And the next time I hear somebody on television talk about short-lived, I swear I'm going to reach through the screen and break their necks. You know, I hate that. It's short-lived. It means something has a short life. It doesn't mean that it lived a short time. It's short-lived. Now, please, all of you people who correct me, and I thank you for it, for all my mispronunciations, will you get the word out? It's never short-lived. Never. It's always short-lived. Damn. We got that straight. Obama blasts GOP over blocking of jobless benefits. Ta-da! Did you see him today? Did you see him on television today? He got out there, Mr. Presidente, and just ripped the Republicans a new body orifice. He said, after years of championing policies that turned a record surplus into a massive deficit, the same people who didn't have any problem spending hundreds of billions of dollars on tax breaks for the wealthiest Americans are now saying we shouldn't offer relief to middle-class Americans like these people standing with me who really do need help. There's supposed to be a vote on an extension tomorrow. Go ahead, defeat it. I want to see the Republicans defeat it, and it'll cause more suffering, and more suffering, and more suffering. I'm curious, how much can America stand? How much can we take before the whole house of cards collapses? Huh? How much? Oh, we have a story here about a Beck listener in Oakland. Who went berserk and started shooting? He started shooting people. So Beck is going blind, and Limbaugh is deaf, and Hannity will lose his voice, and then we have the Three Monkeys.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end of everything that stands, the end, no safety or surprise, the end, I'll never look into...
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. You know, it wasn't that long ago, was it? When we started figuring out that we were polluting our own nest. How long ago was it that we started when I was a kid, the pictures on the newsreels at the movies on Saturday, they always had a newsreel and then a short and then a cartoon and then the feature. And, the newsreels, whenever they wanted to show how powerful the United States was, they showed the smokestacks with the pollution just boiling out of the tops of those stacks, right? It was either a shot from the Pittsburgh skyline or Detroit or Chicago or Gary, Indiana, wherever. Do you remember all that? And when I was a kid growing up, I thought, oh, look, the smokestacks are pumping smoke. Yay! You know, that's what we were taught. But at some point, when was it? In the late 60s, early 70s, all of a sudden, people started writing about environmental destruction and pollution and garbage and junk and crap. And a few people in towards the late 70s in the nuclear anti-nuke movement started warning about these huge collections of nuclear waste, the plutonium, and what were you going to do with it? That's another thing nobody ever talks about anymore. It was supposed to go under the mountain out there in Nevada. Is it Nevada? If it's not, don't email me because, frankly, I don't care. You know, I really don't care. I like the idea of putting all the nuclear waste on top of a rocket, you know, shoot it off into space. You know, why should... well, if it's a matter of survival, if it's a matter of the space creatures or us, screw the space creatures. You know, I'm sure they have their own... problems. But at some point we started, we didn't listen, but we started being told. Remember that commercial where they had the Native American guy, the Indian guy standing there and the camera flashed on people throwing stuff out of their cars and trash on the road? Hell, they'd still do that not far from here. What?
Oh, my God, I'm tripping back to my childhood, and he had the tear.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
He was dripping down his face, and he was just looking out over the horizon.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, and that was Don't Litter. That was about litter. Didn't that sound innocent? Litter. What's litter? Oh, it's little pieces of paper. Now I see people, when we go in a little bit from out here in the foothills, when we head in to town or towns or Atlanta, we see people walking their dogs and they all carry these little bags now. So when the dog poops, you know, they reach down and pick up dog turds and put it in the bag, which I guess is a wonderful thing to do. We just let Rusty out here in the woods or in the backyard, you know. We don't let him out in the woods a lot because we've got creatures back there now that are getting damn hungry and they would look at little Rusty like he was lunch or an hors d'oeuvre. And we don't want him to be very short lived. So, anyway, back in, that wasn't that long ago, was it? 30, 40 years ago? 35 years ago? Where we started being told, look, this can't continue. This can't continue. And of course, the Republicans and the right wingers and the crazy people, started immediately, oh no, you're just trying to destroy America's economy. Remember Carter made a little symbolic gesture. He put solar panels on the roof or something. I don't know what the hell he did. And first thing Reagan did was take him down or didn't take him down. Maybe that story is apocryphal. I don't know. But I'll guarantee to you that there are no solar panels on the White House now. But we've had all these warnings. Oh, and by the way, those scientists, was Hansen one of them? Those scientists who were accused of doctoring the climate reports to get a more grim scenario, after hearings and investigations, they were cleared of anything, and the scientific data still remains. I don't know. But you remember those days? You remember the million years ago? You remember that? Don't give a hoot. Don't pollute. Remember the owl? And who else did they have? They had the owl, they had the Indian. Who else did they have? The owl, the Indian. Now, Smokey the Bear, to hell with Smokey. I mean, he was just, you know, he was like, only you can prevent forest fires, which is not true, you know. But
who were the ones that said the Native Americans called it Kuwaka or Kulaka? It was about carpooling?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, this was back when Jimmy Carter's solution to the energy crisis was that everybody should carpool. And there were all these PSAs for carpooling, and it was the line in the PSA was, the Indians called it Kulaka.
Carp?
Maybe.
But they didn't have cars.
Kulaka. I know.
Oh, never mind.
But no, that was, yeah, and, it, you know, that was the era of the, you know, Coke commercial about teaching the world to sing, and, wow.
Yeah.
And Watergate. I was very young.
All right, stop.
It's all really confused. That
has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with what we're talking about.
It occurred to me the other day that Morgan Freeman was an easy reader on The Electric Company, and I used to watch it as a kid, and I just woke up one morning and realized that. It was all at the same time. Schoolhouse Rock.
That's good, Kathy.
Yeah. Honk if you love the 80s.
I-580 shootout. Suspect, mad at left-wing politics. What happened, this is in Oakland, excuse me, a 45-year-old parolee, described by his mama as angry at left-wing politicians, opened fire on California Highway Patrol officers on an Oakland freeway yesterday and was hit by return fire while wearing body armor. He's not dead. Two officers suffered minor cuts from flying glass. He was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder. The incident started around midnight when two CHIP officers tried to stop a white Toyota Tundra pickup that had been speeding and weaving in and out of traffic. The cops used a loudspeaker to direct the driver off the freeway, but he stopped right on I-580 as officers walked up to the pickup. They saw the man pick up a handgun and open fire. The officers returned gunfire and radio for help, yada, yada, yada. His mother, this guy's name is Williams. Williams's mother of Groveland said her son had been living next door and taking care of her father's house and land. That would be his grandpappy. She said he had been released from prison about 2.5 years ago after a felony conviction, which she declined to describe. And he had almost completed his parole. Mom said, quote, he hasn't been able to get a job because he's an ex-felon. Nobody will hire him, end quote. She said her son, who had been a carpenter and a cabinet maker before his imprisonment, was angry about, quote, what's happening to our country, end quote. Williams watched the news on television and was upset by, quote, the way Congress was railroading through all these left-wing agenda items, end quote, his mother said. Well, you know what he was watching. He was watching Fox News Channel. So Murdoch and the bastards over there can chalk up another one. Way to go, Glenn. You know, Glenn, God is punishing you because you're such a bastard. He's going to rip your eyes out, only he's going to do it the way God does things. You see, Glenn, you're a sick, degenerate God. He's going to give you something called macular extortion or whatever the hell it's called. I have no idea, and I don't care. I hope it's slow, Glenn. I hope your eyes bleed a lot. Maybe it's from sticking all that, what did he stick up to make himself look like he was crying? What was that? Vicks VapoRub? Aha! Yee-hee! Or maybe it's from too much masturbation. You know, don't you remember, Glenn, what you were told back in elementary school? Don't masturbate! And if you do it too much, you're going to go blind! Remember, Glenn? Mrs. Williams said she kept the guns. She had guns in her locked safe, all legally purchased and owned, and she found out they were missing. She went to the safe. She gave her crazy son the combination. Anyway, Mom said she kept the guns because, quote, eventually I think we're going to be caught up in a revolution, end quote. But she said she told her son many times that, quote, he didn't have to be on the front lines, end quote. She said she had no explanation for her boy's actions. She said, quote, something snapped. His life is over. He will go back to prison for the rest of his life. Our lives are over, end quote. Well, you can thank Glenn Beck, Mom. Thank Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh and that crazy crew of sickos every morning on Fox News. What's that guy? Steve Ducci or Ducey or something? Do you know their names? I would know. We don't watch it, but... Oh, the music's playing. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Well, by the way, the other day, last Friday, I got an email from a guy named Eric who has just opened a new website, and you ought to check it out. He has nothing to do with BP, but it's called bpspillsolutions.com. bpspillsolutions.com. And Eric writes, basically, people can post their solution to a number of issues with the Gulf blowout for evaluation. We are encouraging experts to help debunk some of the myth and misinformation that may be submitted by users. If you visit the site, you get the idea. The spill will be with us for a long time, and we hope to help spread the truth and debunk the myths. And it goes on a little bit. And he's a web designer. Eric is his name. Go to check out his website, bpspillsolutions.com. bpspillsolutions.com. And he puts in parentheses, no, we are not BP. No, I went there. It's definitely not BP. But check it out, bpspillsolutions.com. Okay, want to do that? All right, Kathy, would you release all of the phone lines so that folks can call in if they are so inclined? The number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to... if you want to participate in a more direct way. you know, again, if you go to Washington Post website, you will see this long-ass article. I was going to try to cover some of it, but I just don't think I can do it justice on this program. But it's taken 2 years to put this together. And the title of the report is Top Secret America. And the site details the billions of dollars in private, for-profit intelligence operations that have emerged since September 11th. And the Post now calls it the fourth branch of government. The investigation was 2 years in the making. And according to the Atlantic magazine, shook up the vast U.S. intelligence community even before it was released. But if you go to the website, it includes articles, videos, interactive features, and maps, all begging to be explored. You got to check it out. You really should. Top Secret America is what it's called. The Intelligence Industrial Complex is what the authors, Pulitzer Prize winner Dana Priest and her cohort is William Arkin. This is what they write in the introduction. Quote, "This is not exactly President Dwight David Eisenhower's military-industrial complex, which emerged with the Cold War and centered on building nuclear weapons to deter the Soviet Union. This is a national security enterprise with a more amorphous mission, defeating transnational violent extremists. Much of the information about this mission is classified. That's the reason it is so difficult to gauge the success and identify the problems of Top Secret America, including whether money is being spent wisely. The Bush administration gave agency and Congress gave agencies more money than they were capable of responsibly spending. In all, at least 263 organizations have been created as a response to 9/11. Each has required more people, and those people have required more administrative and logistical support, yada, yada, yada. And so anytime you hear the Republicans, you know, some brain-dead, half-wit Republican right-winger saying, well, the Democrats are big government, you know, maybe you should point out to them, not that they'll listen because they can't follow coherent thought. All they can do is follow the guy that's losing his eyeballs or the guy that's lost his hearing and just spout, you know, back the garbage that these two clowns put out there, these two murder clowns put out there. But it has been the Republicans. It's been the Republican administration. You know, Clinton spent 8 years reducing government, much to the pain and suffering of a lot of people that it shouldn't happen to. Bush, on the other hand, as soon as he comes in, starts expanding government exponentially. I mean, the national debt and the budget deficit, everything that the Republicans try to lay off on Obama after less than 2 years in office is a direct result of 8 years of terror under this terrorist organization, this terrorist movement called conservatism as it's currently constituted, and these two monsters that ran the country, Bush and Cheney. And it's amazing, you know, the right wingers now what they're saying is, is he going to blame it on Bush? You dumb bastards, you pitiful, pathetic twits. These two guys come in and destroy everything, and you jerks, it's too complex for you to understand it, right? So anyway, you really should check this out. Top Secret America. You can go to, there's a database, topsecretamerica.com. Or you can go to the Washington Post. And again, I was going to get into it, but it's just, there's too much there. And it's one of those stories that you're better served by just taking a look at it yourself. We'll be back after the break. Don't you dare go away. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. Phone number is 877-996-2556. We're going to take a few calls tonight, like right now. Chuck is in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
All right. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there, you know, not like everybody else.
Yeah, I hear that.
Maybe you can help me out a bit. I'm having a hard time comprehending things.
Well, you don't want any help from me, pal.
We've got a situation where we've got a company in charge of a disaster that their history has accounted for 97% of all infractions in the last however many years, 6 or 10 years, I forget what the period is.
Yeah, I don't think it was that long.
And they're sitting with cap on top of a pipe that's spewing oil at roughly 8,000 pounds per square inch into the Gulf of Mexico. That is so far, according to government estimates, which I think are a joke, but let's go with it, 200 million gallons. They're sitting on top of a reservoir that's 84 billion gallons.
It's what?
84 billion gallons.
Billion gallons or barrels?
Billion gallons. 2.1 billion barrels or 84 billion gallons.
Okay. Is that what the estimate is?
That's what their internal documentation said when they first started drilling. Let's put this in perspective. That's 400 times the size of what has supposedly been spilled already.
Mm-hmm.
So I can imagine that that would easily destroy all the oceans of the earth.
Yeah.
We're talking if you took every single semi-tractor trailer truck in America and fully loaded it and weighed all that and then multiplied it by three, that would be roughly the equivalent weight of the amount of oil we're talking about.
Good God.
Now, these people are in charge of this thing. The president has not made an executive order saying we're taking over. These people whose livelihood, whose very soul and purpose in life is to be gamblers of the highest magnitude.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, these are sociopaths whose whole personality is designed around getting around rules, regulations, and disasters, and taking chances and risks of enormous magnitudes and then covering it up when it fails.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people who are in charge of deciding whether or not, even though all the experts in the field say that the conservative move here is to let the thing flow, at least for 3 days until you can put a cap on it that can put hoses to boats on the surface. Now, mind you, 3 days of spewing at the official estimate of 36,000 barrels a day, okay, means another 100,000 barrels or, what, 4.2 million gallons as opposed to the already 200 million gallons. So we're going to add another 2% to the damage already done going this route. And then pretty much guaranteeing that at least you're not going to have a blowout of a magnitude that just blows the entire cap off the reservoir so that it is free-flowing into the Gulf.
Right.
So what we've come down to is a decision by a bunch of psychopaths, or I'm sorry, sociopaths, that we are going to take this risk. We are going to risk the extermination of the planet Earth so that they can save $5,000 per barrel fines, or what, 36 times 3 days, 100,000 barrels. So what are you talking, you know, $50 billion?
That sounds right.
Okay. I wanted to make sure I understood what was going on.
Well, yeah, but this is the way our system works. Look, let me tell you something. I don't care. If Barack Obama teaches everybody how to walk on water and we all become zillionaires as a result of his leadership, I will never, ever, 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 in my heart of hearts, excuse this man for not nationalizing BP as soon as this happened. BP has a 6-decade-long history of destroying everything it touches. They don't care what the destruction is. They don't care how many lives are affected. They just continue. And for Barack Obama, from day one, and I fault him for this. He's the president. He's the leader. He's the man who busted his ass to become president. And we are the fools who put him in office. Now, there's no way to shirk this responsibility, the fact that he was the president when this occurred. All he had to do was to immediately and by executive order take over BP. He didn't do it because of the political fallout that he would experience. This was a political move. And if somebody advised him not to, like Rahm Emanuel, I don't care. I don't care. Rahm Emanuel's not the president. Barack Obama is. And like I say, so I forever will fault this man, Barack Obama, for not doing what should have been done to cut these rat bastards no slack whatsoever when this occurred. And I don't know why he didn't do it. Chuck, I don't want to believe that he was so far into the hip pocket of BP or they in his that neither of them would do anything. But this has gone on for 3 months now, and Barack Obama has still not showed leadership. I'm not saying George Bush would have. I'm not saying Bill Clinton would have. I'm just saying this guy's the president now. There's a lot we can blame on Bush, and I'll blame stuff on Bush until hell freezes over. And maybe it was George W. Bush who set this up for this to happen, and Dick Cheney with their insistence that nobody had to follow any rules. But once this occurred, once the result of 8 years of Bush-Cheney occurred with this eruption, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama should have very quickly asked somebody to tell him exactly what BP has done over the past 6 decades. And then he should have said, all right, we're taking it over.
Yep.
And that didn't happen. But I'm in complete agreement with you, Chuck. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. And I don't, you know, other than fear on the part of Obama's political handlers that maybe he wouldn't get reelected if he gave the right-wing thugs in this country, which is every one of them on in media, if he gave them the ammunition that they were just so desperately in need of. Oh, he took over another company. The way he tried, these right-wingers have tried to make it sound like he's taken over the auto industry and he's taken over the financial services industry. You know, there is so many lies. There's no restraint anymore from the right wing. They don't care what they say. Every single thing they say is a lie. Everything. So, but still, if Obama, knowing this, and he does know it, he does know that these lying bastards will say or do anything. They hate America, they hate life, they hate everything. But even knowing that, Obama should have just stuffed cotton in his ears and seized this company and took it over and told them all their little efforts to clean up the oil spill, tell them to get the hell away and then turn it over to Americans who knew how to do it. We'll be right back.
about Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Jeff is in San Francisco listening online. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, I was just making a list of the 10 things I do to fix America. If you don't mind me listening.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Hear my futility. Sure. Number one, I'd campaign finance reform, free and fair elections.
Yeah.
Two, nationalize energy. Three, single-payer health care, a real deal. Four, cut defense spending in half or more, military-industrial complex. Five, rate taxes on the top 1% to 1960 levels. Six, legalize same-sex marriage. Throw in some high-speed rail in number seven. Eight, maybe I'm dreaming, really dreaming, gun control. Nine, end the phony drug and war and legalize and decriminalize all drugs. And maybe repeal, number 10, repeal NAFTA. Any disagreements with those?
The one about drugs, what's that again?
I said I'd end the phony drug war and legalize and decriminalize all drugs.
I might have a problem with that one because there's some really murderous drugs out there,
Well, there's more murders going on with them. I know meth is
right.
The hideous.
Yeah.
I could say maybe not that one,
right.
But we could start with marijuana. Obviously.
Well, yeah, marijuana to make marijuana illegal is insane. We could pass laws that say foreign marijuana is illegal and help our domestic growers.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, they could provide marijuana for the United States. We would become an export country, sending some of the best reefer on earth out to the rest of the world that wanted to buy it. I have a hard time with cocaine, too, because it is a drug drenched in blood. Now, I realize why it's drenched in blood. Partly is because it's illegal. I understand that.
Yeah.
Heroin, I think anyone who uses heroin, shoots a needle in their arm to get high or dead, is kind of stupid. But I guess people should be allowed to be stupid. So, I would go along pretty much with the idea of decriminalizing drugs, but I would damn sure, and I'd legalize completely, of course, marijuana. I mean, that's insane to have marijuana illegal. American growers have come up with some wonderful wonderful marijuana. And people listening to this program, if you don't like me using the word wonderful and the word marijuana right next to each other, go to hell.
really. Well, they say 60% of the drugs and the killings going on the border in Mexico are about marijuana, not all about.
Well, it's not about domestic marijuana.
It's foreign marijuana.
Right. It's these Mexican drug cartels that would not exist except for one very salient basic fact. Americans want their drugs.
Yes.
And Americans don't give a damn if 27,000 people have been gunned down in the border areas between Mexico and the United States. Americans want their drugs. And this
a big part of that drug war that got these people getting into the drug trade was because of NAFTA. It really messed up all the farmers down there, what I've heard.
Well, yeah, and that's true. That's very true. You know, if you're gonna, if you have a choice of watching your family starve to death or assisting in the marijuana drug trade in Mexico, what are you gonna do?
I'm going to cross the border.
Well, you're going to assist in the marijuana drug trade if you're a Mexican, because you're not going to allow your family to die because of something that George Bush and Bill Clinton put into effect. So, NAFTA. So, yeah. The drug wars, all this madness in Mexico, that's a state that it's getting to the verge where it's almost either a narco state or a failed state. I don't know if those terms.
It used to be about like Colombia was in the 80s.
Yeah, I don't know if those terms.
With Escobar going down there.
Yeah, if those terms are interchangeable or not. But, I agree with probably 95% of the only other thing. Where you talk about the weapons industry cutting in half, I say nationalize the weapons industry so it's run by the government for the sole purpose of shutting it down. We don't need weapons. We've got 9,000 nuclear warheads. We don't need to be spending God knows how much, trillions of dollars on wars and weaponry and preparation to use these weapons. We just don't need to do it. But I pretty much agree with you, Jeff. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate
Thank you.
Appreciate you calling. Of course, I would take it a couple of steps further in terms of nationalizing things. You know, I've said it before. I've got those five industries that I think should be utterly, absolutely, completely nationalized. We should all become happy, content, fulfilled democratic socialists. Okay, social democrats. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Your news unfiltered, like this, only with Mike Malloy.
I had no choice. I was born with the gift of a golden voice and 27 angels from the great beyond.
It is 25 before the hour. This is interesting. I got this from, who sent it to me? Pistol Pack and Mama from Texas, I think. Let me see here. Who sent this? Teresa. I've got two articles here. One from that she sent me from yesterday. And it says, U.S. government halts funds for the climate unit. The American government has suspended its funding of the University of East Anglia in the UK, Climate Research Unit, CRU, citing the scientific doubts raised by last November's leak of hundreds of stolen emails. The U.S. Department of Energy was one of the unit's main sources of funding for its work assembling a database of global temperatures. The funding should have been, it's about £131,000 a year, which is, what, about $250,000? Or not quite that much. No, I guess not quite. About $200,000. Is that it? Doesn't matter. The contract should have been renewed automatically in April, but the Department of Energy suspended all payments pending a scientific peer review of the unit's work. All right, that's dated yesterday. Dated July 7th. A third inquiry clears British scientists of serious wrongdoing. What exactly was the scandal about the climate research unit? Now, I don't care what you've heard from a blind boy or deaf boy. What exactly was the scandal? On the allegations of withholding temperature data, the inquiry finds that the CRU was not in a position to withhold access of such data or tamper with it. On the allegation of biased station selection and analysis, we find no evidence of bias. The overall implication of the allegations was to cast doubt on the extent to which CRU's work in this area could be trusted and should be relied upon, and we find no evidence to support that implication. On the allegations that there was subversion of the peer review or editorial process, we find no evidence to substantiate this claim. On the allegations that in two specific cases there had been a misuse by the CRU scientists in presenting to the public and policymakers, we find that the allegations cannot be upheld. In particular, on the question of the composition of temperature reconstructions, we found no evidence of exclusion of other published temperature reconstructions that would show a very different picture. Blah, blah, blah. So, in other words, on a 1, 2, 3, 4, on a 5-count indictment, they were found totally innocent last, the 7th of this month. Yesterday, it is being reported that the Obama administration has suspended its funding of this climate research unit, citing the scientific doubts. What scientific doubts? What the hell are they talking about? That sounds like something that would come out of Rush Limbaugh's mouth or Glenn Beck's soon-to-be blind eyes. Scientific doubts? There were no scientific doubts. There was all kinds of deception and bullcrap. There are so many forces on this planet who do not want the idea of global climate change or global warming even to be addressed, much less dealt with. So, according to the Sunday Times of the UK, U.S. government has suspended its funding of the University of East Anglia's Climate Research Unit. And yet, these right-wing beasts, these bastards that pollute our political system, I wonder if a blind boy Beck or deaf boy Limbaugh or sociopath Hannity, if any of these three wise men are going to go on the air tomorrow and say, oops, listen, I forgot to mention to you yesterday, but the day before yesterday, the U.S. government suspended all payments to the climate research unit in the U.K. that has been doing yeoman's work on trying to put all this stuff together. Now, do you suppose that story will get out to the deadhead, not the deadheads, that's respectable, to the brain-dead morons and jerks who watch Fox News? Do you suppose any of them, the ones that are listening right now, hey, you bubble brains, were you aware that your precious Barack Obama has stopped all funding of the Climate Research Unit? That should make you all happy, shouldn't it? Shouldn't it make you happy, you little piss ants? Now, I mean, there's something that Barack has done that you guys have been advocating for. Oh, yeah, there's no global warming. What are you spending money for? Oh, well. Ron is in Markham, Illinois. Hello, Ron.
Hello, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Pretty better than I was, because I used to live in San Antonio, and maybe you remember me.
Are you a mass killer?
No, but well, no, I'm glad to be out of Texas, because it's pretty much not much you can do in that state.
Did you used to call me or email me from San Antonio?
Yeah, I used to. And I last emailed you on Father's Day from this location. And I wrote you that I was weeks behind in your podcast.
Oh, yeah, okay. Now I know who you are, Ron.
But
sure.
Caught up at 9:30 p.m. Central Time, so I'm listening to you live today.
Yeah, well, good. That's...
And I just want to tell your listeners that subscribing to your podcast is a good way to not miss not word nor rant.
I
like that phrase. But
well, thanks, Ron.
I just want to make one comment about, because it came up while I was on hold listening to one of the callers, the last caller. I know the drug wars are bad in Mexico and everything, but if we can just teach our kids not to want drugs in the first place, I think that's where it all begins. So,
Well, I agree. You know, the best drug prevention program is not some of these, in my opinion, they're put together like the DARE program or this other crap. The best thing is to be honest with our kids and tell them, you know, first of all, drugs, let's start with the gateway drug, which is tobacco. It will kill you. It's a legal poison. But here's the problem. Once the kids figure out that a legal poison that kills 400,000, 500,000 people a year, that stuff is legal, and a joint is illegal, the kids are going to make their own decision. They're going to say somebody is crazier than a loon. You know, why should cigarettes be legal and marijuana not? So you've got to overcome that. Plus, another thing you have to deal with here, Ron, is not the baby boom generation, because they're all getting old, but the generation behind the baby boom generation that are now dealing with teenagers and pre-teenagers. That generation sucked up more reefer and more cocaine and more drugs than any generation in history. How does that generation, now that it's having children, without being hypocritical, sit down with their kids and say, look, you can't do this? And the kid says, what are you talking about? I've heard your stories. I know what you and Dad talked about, or you and Mom talked about. I've seen your friends. I know what you've done. And you're going to tell me, look at you, you've got a mortgage, and you're going to tell me I can't do something you did. You see, that's where it gets a little dodgy, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I agree with that. I had a point to make, and it slipped. Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
I have my problems, too, but they don't stem from drugs. They stem from just genetics, and I think I wrote you about that. So, I mean, you know, I can't imagine anybody trying to mess themselves up purposely.
No, I can't either. Mm-hmm. And I've always, you know, I talk a lot about my own drug usage on this program, and I've said repeatedly that any kid who does drugs as a means of, acting out, or because he or she wants to try something, and they're not willing to wait until their bodies and minds and brains can handle it, they're making a terrible, terrible mistake. Mm-hmm. But, you know, how far do lectures go with teenagers? How far do they go? That's
yeah,
the problem.
But you're starting off right with Molly right now.
Well, I've got a son, 32, that mm-hmm. or soon will be 32, and I went through with him the same thing all those years ago. I just told him, you know, let's get some things straight. Cigarettes will kill you. If you drink before you're of drinking age and get caught, you'll go to jail. Marijuana, you get caught, you'll go to jail. And I said to Chris, I know you're going to do these. I know you're going to sit around with your friends with a 12 pack of beer and see how stupid drunk you can get. Okay. But if you get behind the wheel of a car or get in a car, good chance you might die.
Yeah.
And you're too young to die. You're just too young to die. And as far as the other stuff is concerned, you know that when you get busted, for illegal drugs, of course I'll come down and bail you out. But you may wind up doing jail time, and there's nothing I can do about it. So I just tried my best to say, look, it's your life. I don't know. Chris never got busted. He's still alive. He's married and doing great. Just great. Thanks, Ron.
And I'm sure it wouldn't interest anybody outside of a small circle of friends. Smoking marijuana is more fun than drinking beer. But a friend of ours was captured and they gave him 30 years. Maybe we should raise our voices, ask somebody why. But demonstrations are a drag, besides we're much too high. And I'm sure it would.
It is 10 before the hour. We didn't get around to Story Corner tonight. We'll try it tomorrow night. It's a good one. Another scary one. Everything's scary. It's all scary, isn't it? Huh? Are you scared? I'm scared. Tim is in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to kind of dovetail with the last caller and bring up the Iran-Contra and the drugs. Okay. And being from Wisconsin and Eugene Hassenfuss being shot down by the Sandinistas and...
Right.
Oh, God, and the butcher of Central America, Ronald Reagan, and Ali North on Fox News. I'm just wondering if this sort of stuff is still going on. I mean, with all this opium in Afghanistan, it's a pretty big slush fund over there.
Well, yeah, the chief go-to guy where it concerns the opium trade is Hamid Karzai's brother, who also is allegedly a CIA operative. We're doing with Hamid Karzai, or not we, but the U.S. government under Obama is doing with Hamid Karzai's brother what the U.S. government under Reagan and Bush did with Manuel Noriega. Now, they're half a world apart from each other, but Manuel Noriega was considered to be a CIA asset, and he was also instrumental in allowing Panama to be a transshipment point for all that cocaine coming out of Colombia. And the U.S. government knew it. They took their cut. They got their money. The rest of it went to pollute and corrupt so many millions of Americans. So it's the same thing. Different part of the world, different drug, but the same thing. Eventually, Hamid Karzai's brother will be shot dead, or he will be, you know, and he'll say, well, the insurgents got him, when in fact it'll be a bullet from a gun from a American assassination squad or subcontractor. We know these things. We know these things. So we sit back and wait for them to happen, and then we see them on the news, and we go, oh, my goodness, really? Hamid Karzai was gunned down by insurgents. Can you imagine that? Yeah, it never changes, does it? Does it, Tim?
No, it's chilling. I was involved in the El Salvador Sister City program when I was in college, and St. Paul Church was broken into, and records were stolen. Way back in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, infiltration's there. And now we got juggleheads, you know, oogling over, Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bizarre world. It's a parallel universe. And
it is, yeah.
Propaganda is amazing. It's just amazing, and people just chew it up. And they're eating the entrails of the propaganda machine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're living off of, and they surround us. And it's chilling. It's a chilling time in American history.
Well, the only thing I would, and Tim, thank you. We're about out of time here. I appreciate what you had to say. The only caveat that I would put on what you just said, when you say it's a chilling time in American history, this has been going on forever. I mean, it's been going on, in the manner in which it is going on today, although it's been accelerated, it's been going on since the end of World War II, when U.S. intelligence realized that the next big enemy was going to be the Soviet Union and global communism. So that started the assassination squads, the hit squads, the support for dictatorial militaristic governments. We supported BP as they financed the overthrow of Mohammad Mossadegh in Iran in 1953, was it? We supported the killers in, Guatemala? Was it Guatemala where Arbenz, the president, was it Guatemala, was overthrown by United Fruit Company, you know, Chiquita Banana. You know, Chiquita Banana that you buy. Those are just two early examples. It just goes on and on, never stops. So the only qualification of what you said, Tim, is this is not new. And I know you know that. This has been going on for over half a century. And this is why the rest of the world, when they do express hatred for the United States, it's so intense. We have overthrown their governments. We have debased their societies. We have told them that they live like monkeys and pigs. We have assassinated their leaders. We have destabilized their economies and ruined their currencies. We have sent, as we are right now, we have hit squads in Pakistan. We have hit squads in Iran. Probably quite a few in Russia. I mean, this, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. said it, that the largest, I'm paraphrasing, but what he was saying is the most warmongering nation on earth was his own nation. And shortly after that, that's when he was ordered assassinated, and he was assassinated. So when American leaders step out of the crowd and say the truth about the United States, they are eliminated. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy.